Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The one thing it can't tolerate is intolerance, or it can, or the least tolerant person keeps getting amplified. Maybe we should give some horrible distraction to Chris Bassitt every single start and see how he handles it.
You watch your own team so much more closely than you watch anything else in the league. It would literally be physically impossible not to.
And welcome to episode number 270 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we're working to time our ejections for maximum dramatic impact. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined, surprise, by Nick Dyka, the illustrious.
Surprise.
You continue
surprise,
to be
surprise.
The most famous person, probably most famous person we've had on our podcast, regularly anyway.
Greg, I want a sandwich stamp card that I can get stamped every time I come on. And then after 10, maybe I wouldn't say no to a free sandwich or some type of reward system.
If this is not already your 10th, you get to host.
Oh, no, I can't. No, I don't want that responsibility.
All right. Well, yeah, because you're responsible for the following if you're hosting. You have to say that we're going to talk about Anthony Bass and his non-apology apology, the elephant in the room. We're going to talk about the Blue Jays batters scoring 20 runs and then relying on the pitchers to carry them pretty much every game since. We're going to highlight the guys who are doing the cool stuff. Specifically three of them in the starting rotation and then a handful out of the bullpen who've really stepped up. Offense wise, we'll talk about Brandon Belt, Vlad Jr., George Springer, and pretty much Bo Bichette is the one I guess we really should be talking about. We will take your questions. We're going to give a gold star to the dramatic timing of Dalton Varsho. And then we'll see where that takes us. So let's start off with the unfortunate bit, where it's not about baseball. It's about a baseball player who still employed incredibly by the Toronto Blue Jays, who is kind of behaving like a trash human being. Anthony Bass. After the low-key complaining that flight attendants made his children clean up their mess on a plane. Crazy talk. That got him so much blowback on Twitter that he ended up deleting his Twitter account. So he had to go over to Instagram to be incredibly homophobic. Why does this happen, Nick? In your, like, I know you're obviously not in the man's head, but yeah. Why?
I assume, you know, unfortunately, like, the views Anthony Bass holds are held up to, was it Tuesday morning? In an ideal world up till Tuesday morning, are unfortunately and very, you know, frighteningly seemingly more and more common in certain parts of the U.S. and even in Canada, I would venture a guess. And I think, you know, he's probably has a lot to do with how he was raised and the life experience he has. None of that is to say that the view is okay or appropriate or not extreme. It's extremely, you know, hateful and intolerant, I think. And obviously the Blue Jays think that as well, because that's why he apologized. But to ask why somebody holds those views is, that's, you know, a master's or a graduate level thesis. It probably has a lot to do with, you know, how someone was raised and the places they've been and the experiences they've had. But it's not okay. And I think ultimately that's the thing that is important, is that it's not okay. He's also not a teenager or something. Like, he's old enough to know better than to say something like that, or to, I guess it was to amplify something that said.
If you were living under a rock in a cave last week and a Blue Jays fan, Anthony Bass retweeted a video that voiced support for the boycotts of Target and Bud Light over their support of the LGBTQIA plus, I've probably forgotten a letter because I'm not very good with that acronym, community, essentially saying that, you know, we are, you know, we shouldn't even acknowledge that these people exist, and companies that do acknowledge that people who are gay or gender nonconforming should not be acknowledged and should be put in whatever place that is. And I think that whole thing is ridiculous. And you know, from a personal standpoint, I tweeted out that you can all unfollow if you think Anthony Bass had any right to say that. I think I lost a whole 3 followers. So thank you to the other 1,600 of you who, I'm sure some of you are bots, but to the 1,000 or so people who I assume follow me at some point. But I think we get here into a couple of the people who objected to me said, well, you don't seem very tolerant. And it's like, okay, there's something called the tolerance paradox that I would like to point out. And that is that in a society that accepts and tolerates all kinds of different people, the one thing it can't tolerate is intolerance, or the least tolerant person keeps getting amplified and squeezes out the concept of allowing people to be different, people to have different experiences, people to have to express themselves differently, because the person who is least tolerant will tamp down on that all of the time, and it flies in the face of the freedoms of those other people. So I am intolerant of a view that says that gay people should not exist, or that trans people should not be acknowledged as real human beings, or as the people that they say that they are. I'm really intolerant of that. I will admit that. I think the Blue Jays should be a heck of a lot less tolerant of it, because they can replace Anthony Bass really with marginal effect on this team. And it would send a wonderful message to all of the people who have not been heard, and who have felt left out, and who, especially in June, you know, Pride Month.
Also, Anthony Bass is one of 26 people who play for the Toronto Blue Jays Major League team. And I can't even venture a guess of how many people work at the stadium and in the front office. Amplifying the things he amplified, that has to be isolating to, if not people on the team itself, which I would imagine it would be. I mean, there's 25 other men in there. To think that they don't have relationships with gay or trans people seems statistically very unlikely. and again, beyond that, there's all the people who work for the team and at the stadium. He, what he did, like, was something that I think could make his, the people he works with uncomfortable. And that's something I think he should have thought about and considered before he said it. And it's ultimately the biggest reason it's wrong is because what you're saying, Greg, is that you can't, everybody should be valued intrinsically, and there's no place for carving out worth based on sexual orientation or gender or any of that stuff. That's the main reason. In terms of like how he's going to now move ahead with the people that he plays baseball with and works with, I can feel that's pretty, it could be isolating for some of them too, which is another reason he should have shut up.
Full disclosure, I work for Rogers, the parent company of the Toronto Blue Jays, who owns the Toronto Blue Jays outright. So I know how the company as a whole, and obviously each department within the company treats these things differently, but I know how the company as a whole treats inclusion and diversity as part of their agenda. They spend a lot of time and money trying to make sure that they are being fair and inclusive. So to have someone so public, fly right in the face of that and face very minor consequences is surprising to me. I feel like there, you know, I don't know what the corporate reaction to that was. Maybe they're trying to contain it by having him apologize and saying as little about it as possible. But I think it is an insult to the people who are about to go to Pride Night. And Anthony Baskin making an appearance on the mound, a guy who thinks that, you know, he should be allowed to say that you should be erased. It's just deeply offensive.
Yeah. And, you know, my hope is also that, like, you know, this is Pride Month. This is a time where this is the last story that we should be, like, talking about in relation to, like, gay and queer communities. This is supposed to be a time where we're like just celebrating all the people and things and organizations and parts of the community that are affiliated with gay and trans people, not one guy, you know, amplifying a boycott with weird Christian undertones. And that's disappointing to me too, that it's taking space and attention away from all the positive, amazing things that this month should be about. And I guess the other thing I was kind of, I didn't want to cut you off, Greg, but when you're talking about the people who are replying to you saying it's not very tolerant of you to not accept this, that just feels to me so, it's like it's ignoring the world around them to say something like that. I mean, in the last 5 years, I can think of two mass shootings at gay bars off the top of my head, right? There was the one in Colorado more recently, and then there was one in Florida.
Pulse nightclub, yeah.
Yes, Pulse, yeah. So for somebody to just strip this down to this like weird academic philosophical idea about tolerance, it's like so blind to the world around them and seeing what's happening to people in gay communities. I mean, we're literally, you know, just coming off a year where the World Cup was fundamentally changed because it was held in a country where you're not allowed to be gay, you know, for all intents and purposes. So I think these are all important things when we consider what we're talking about with things around like free speech and tolerance and things like that. People in the LGBTQ community have been and continue to be very much up against things that a lot of us aren't. And that's why having somebody on the Blue Jays enforce a viewpoint that pushes them up further against more difficult things is, for me, not acceptable.
So yeah, I will extend an unofficial, not tongue-in-cheek, do-over to the Blue Jays to still, you can DFA Anthony Bass at any time and recover some of the goodwill that you have lost. I am not meaning to forget or dismiss or minimize, but we do have also a week's worth of baseball to talk about. So I think we've made our position quite clear on it. But always, as feel free to tweet at us if we were unclear. And you need us to do more. We're going to talk about baseball games. Believe it or not, a bunch of them happened. And generally, it went well for Toronto, which I haven't been able to say for like, what, 3-4 weeks? It's been rough. They scored 20 runs in Tampa, which I believe was just before our last podcast. Since then, they've had two games where they've scored 7, one of which they lost. And another one that they won. The offense here is really not anything on paper versus what's happening on the field. How do you reconcile that in your head when you're watching games?
Like, to me, it kind of is about what they said all offseason, right? Where they were getting more balance. There's more, handedness variation in the lineup with Varsho and Kiermaier and Belt. And if you compare this team to the team last year, like they are a weaker offensive team, right? Teoscar Hernandez was a very good hitter. Lourdes Gurriel on balance was a very good hitter, and they replaced them with players that weren't as good hitters as them. So I'm not as surprised to see them struggling. Now, there's certain people in the offense that their productions maybe been a bit surprising. We'll get to that later as I'm looking at the G-chat message you sent me. But I think this is, somewhat par for the course. I'm surprised Dalton Varsho has struggled as much as he has, but this is certainly, not a super unlikely outcome for someone who's played 2 seasons in the major leagues and hasn't really had in his best season, his WRC plus was what, like 7 or 8% above league average. He was like 107 or 108. So, I think this is, the Jays reconstructed their roster, and it's a team that's going to win more 3-2 games than it's going to win 7-5, I think.
The Jays are, before today's game, and I don't think it would have changed considering it was a 3-1 score, the Jays were 8th in ERA and 11th in runs scored across all of Major League Baseball. So they, believe it or not, despite all of this really, like, gut-wrenching futility with runners on, the Blue Jays are still a top-half offense. Now, obviously, a top-half offense is not going to win you a division, especially not the AL East.
No. For context, they were 4th in baseball in runs scored last year.
Yeah, so and I guess for me the really crazy part is the number of times where the offense in an inning will consist of single, walk, single, or double, walk, infield single, or like walk, ground rule, double, walk, and that's it. And I'm like, James and T.O. on Twitter has kept track of the utter futility of being able to get an extra base hit with a runner in scoring position. Like, these two things are like oil and water for the Blue Jays. And I'm like, is that a function of how they built the lineup? Or is it a function of some bad luck? Or is it a function of approach, partially, where guys know that, they're not going to bang out 250 home runs, for the whole season. So they're just trying to move the line. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at, again, the hitters that left versus the hitters that replaced them this year, they are hitters that don't, slug or barrel the ball at the same rate as Teoscar and Lourdes. So I think part of it is the single, walk, ground rule, double, that's more likely when you have a Kevin Kiermaier and a Whit Merrifield than when you have like a Teoscar and a Lourdes kind of thing. So I think part of it's that. Although, again, like you said, they're still 10th this year in 11th, baseball.
But, yeah.
Oh, and slugging percentage, they're 10th. Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
So we will talk about, though, the pitching, I think, is the reason why this week has gone so well. Because the hitting has been, a little bit and a little late, but on the season, the Jays pitching staff is combined for 9 shutouts so far, which is on pace for the best, the most number of shutouts that they've had. They are 8th in ERA. Specifically, there are 3 gentlemen in the rotation: Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, and I didn't think we'd be saying this at the beginning of the season, Jose Berríos, who continue to go 6-plus innings and give up 1 or no runs and strike out in, I mean, more so Gausman and Bassett, shockingly, but strike out enough people to limit all kinds of damage. It's only usually a home run or one unfortunate inning that gets these guys, especially in the last turn. I mean, Alek Manoah has been an absolute write-off for the entire season, but Bassett has more than picked up that slack, and Berríos is getting closer and closer to that guy that they signed to a 7-year extension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been good. They've been healthy, which has definitely helped them get to where they are, because Mitch White, who's, I think, their first choice as a number 6 starter, he's been injured for most of the season so far. So, they've lived up to expectations for the most part, with, you know, Alek Manoah being the only exception. And like you said, the pitching has had to hold the line because the offense hasn't been quite as dominant, as it was last year, or even as we probably hoped it would be this year.
Chris Bassett has done some crazy stuff. Complete game shutout. And then he had he said sinus infection. Some people looking at him thought it might have been something else, but literally to the point where he could feel his pulse pounding in his head, and he took intentional pitch clock violations. He allowed no runs, I believe, in that outing. He allowed, was it no runs last night? Now I'm looking. Runs last night in 6 2/3. That's while he was trying to catch a plane to go see his wife, who was already in labor.
Hey, congratulations to him.
I don't know if the baby has arrived yet. At game time today, they had not announced that the baby had arrived. So I hope all is well there. But I mean, if he maybe we should give some horrible distraction to Chris Bassett every single start and see how he handles it, because hasn't had a negative effect on him at all so far.
You know, when the season started, I thought he would be probably the pitcher most annoyed with any kind of difficulty because of how frustrated he was getting with pitch calm.
Right.
And the pitch clock. But he seems to be able to handle any other kind of pressure very easily.
He's steeled himself against the pitch clock, and everything else is just seems like a minor inconvenience.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing I would say is, I like to bring it back, is I do think it would behoove them to still think about adding some pitching depth, especially on the starting side of things, because it's just so unlikely that you get through a season with 5 starters, you know, making their turn. It's certainly happened, and you know, it's ideal, but it's not that likely. So whether it's Mitch White or, you know,
we are in June, and Hyunjin Ryu now is the most intriguing question mark I've ever seen coming back from a second Tommy John surgery for me.
Interesting. Are you feeling that he might be able to give the team good innings as a starter in the second half?
That's what the question mark is. I mean, he's going to be in a position where 100 innings is no problem. If he does make it all the way back, again, anything can happen with Tommy John. But if he makes it all the way back to the bigs, he is not relying on velocity, right? He is relying on control. He has a long track record of being a control pitcher. It was the one thing he wasn't doing before he got hurt, or when he got hurt, perhaps. So he's a control pitcher. Can he be better than Alek Manoah or Yusei Kikuchi? All signs to me point to, like, those are the two guys he has to be better than. He doesn't have to be Kevin Gausman, right? To help this rotation. He just has to be better than Yusei Kikuchi.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would look at his, like, 2021 as maybe, like, a reference for what's achievable when he comes back. And that's, like, kind of a 430, low fours, mid-fours ERA. And that's not something that I think is out of the question for like Kikuchi and hopefully Manoah, if he can, you know, get things figured out. You're going to need to wait till Josh comes back though, to weigh in on that, slider tilt and, you know, release pointer above my pay grade.
He's got the graphs. We don't have the graphs. All right. So, the bullpen though, of course you can't, you can go seven innings and then the whole thing can fall apart on you if your bullpen is, you don't have the right buttons to push. And I often talk about how many outs can you get out of your bullpen on this podcast. It's my own like mental measure of how well you're doing. This bullpen has been asked to get less than nine outs more often than not because of those three guys. And if you can get yourself into a position for less than nine outs, this bullpen will do it for you more often than not, because rookie Nate Pearson has been incredibly, incredibly lockdown good. Trevor Richards has given up on his, as Josh mentioned last week, on his questionable, or was it on Twitter? Anyway, he's given up on his crappy curveball and his line, leaning on his incredible changeup. Eric Swanson misses bats. I don't. At 94.7 miles an hour, Swanson misses more bats than I've ever seen a guy who does not throw 100 miles an hour. And Jordan Romano, though he has had the nail biterish moments, has been able to give you three or more outs when needed. I think he's only got three blown saves. So every other night, you can get through that. I'm gonna. You know, leave Tim Mesa off this list just because I want to focus on those four guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've been a very reliable back end of the bullpen. I mean, you haven't even really noticed that Adam Simber and Zach Pop have been hurt, which is great and speaks to how well they've all pitched.
Yeah, Simber's back. He had a lousy outing and then a decent one. So Simber's a useful tool, but I think those four guys can get you through the last two to three innings, provided you don't end up in a 1-0 game all the freaking time. Happening.
So one thing, I would mention is on the nine outs thing is they have had to go, the bullpen has had to pitch fairly significant innings often when Alek Manoah and Yusei Kikuchi have pitched. And so I do think some of the workload concerns are still there, from, you know, even though they have looked good, because sometimes I see, you know, them warming up Yimi Garcia in the fifth inning when Kikuchi's starting and thinking, oh, this, he's going to be gassed come August. So a little more length, or, you know, maybe a more traditional long man, might help the bullpen too. I would say.
Yeah, and I think they were hoping Mitch White would show up to rescue them, but that doesn't seem to be on the chart,
yeah,
so to speak. I'm not sure where they go for those extra arms, because again, they've kind of boxed themselves in. The only guy with options is Nate Pearson, and that's not the guy you want to demote.
Yeah. Does Zach Pop still have options?
He might.
Right.
I don't, so probably.
For reference here, I'm just going to look it up. And interestingly, the Jays are quite low on the inning pitched leaders for relievers. They're 29.
Yeah, because most teams don't have three guys who will take you into the seventh.
Yeah,
or most nights, which the Blue Jays have not had three guys who would take you into the seventh for any extended period of time for the last. I mean, they've been a good team for the last 3 years and haven't had three starters who would do that. So it is a blessing. We are thankful, and we hope it continues.
I was so surprised to hear that, though, because on the broadcast the other day, they were talking about how three Jays were on pace for like over 70 appearances and something crazy like that. Sorry, three Jays relievers were on pace for over. Yeah.
And that's probably because those are the guys that John Schneider keeps tapping over and over and over again because they get the job done.
Right. Yeah.
The offense, Brandon Belt, he's fixed his eye, but you know, there's a lot of walks in there, but he does not seem to be, you know, that belted thing that they used to used to print out all the time. There was a hashtag and everything on Twitter. He has 2 home runs and 152 plate appearances.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did hit 2 more doubles today. This is Saturday, June 3rd. He'd hit 2 more doubles today, but yeah, no, he has looked like a more limited player than I think we were expecting to get when the Jays signed him, or at least the better case outcome of them signing him. But that's to me not entirely surprising given that he is 35 now. You know, he had a massive power breakout in 2021, but before that he had never hit over, I think it's 19 home runs in a season. So yeah,
we still weren't expecting his OBP to be 375 and his slugging to be 378.
No.
It seems a little soft for a guy who's playing first base for you.
That's true. This is above my pay grade, but it seems like he can get beat by velocity, especially like velocity high. He seems to struggle with pitches, you know, 95 and above kind of thing. I'm not sure if that is contributing to his struggles to hit the ball hard, or hit it out of the park, but yeah, getting on base as much as he is, it is like a nice way to kind of like cushion from the downside, if that makes sense. And maybe as the weather gets hotter, we'll start to see a few more balls get out.
There was an old poem about Johnny Mize. It was, your arms are gone, your legs likewise, but your eyes, Johnny, oh, your eyes. last thing left. Hopefully we're not that far down the road with Belt. Vlad, of course, has no age excuse and also no power. His last home run, 100 and something plate appearances ago, was off of a position player. He has 8 on the season. He's fallen well behind Bo Bichette and Dalton Varsho, who you were making fun of because, you know, not fun of. You were saying that you know, didn't have a lot of power potential. Mm-hmm. I don't know that since his knee tweak, he has really had mechanically, again, a lot of things go kind of funky with his swing.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems to be missing pitches he usually hits. In swinging through a lot. And I know, so he had the knee issue. He also had a wrist injury, I think, he missed a couple games with a wrist. So I'm not sure if what's happening to him is that it's kind of an injury thing. And if it is, do you put him on the IL? It's hard to, you know, again, it's hard to know what's really going on, but yeah, this is probably the longest stretch I can remember of Vlad kind of hitting the way he is, where it feels like when he comes up, he's not really going to make a difference. And I know he won them the game today, but it was just a well-placed ground ball, you know, down the line. So I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Do you think he's hurt, or do you think like this is like a swing decision thing, or?
So this will happen all the time. Josh and I will go, and I will go, I think the guy's hurt. And Josh will go, well, you don't know that. So
yeah.
Josh isn't here, so I'll say, I don't know that. But I think guys play hurting, mm-hmm. right? But not injured. I think they play that way all the time. And I think that the worst judge of whether or not that's affecting their overall performance is the player.
Right. Yeah.
So if he realized how much he had lost in terms of, and again, I don't think it's necessarily that he is broken, but I think he's favoring something slightly. Either he doesn't want to put, you know, doesn't want to twist a certain way. He's instinctively, you know, putting weight a little farther forward or hanging back a little long, right? Any of those tiny little adjustments. I don't think he's necessarily 100% aware of it because it's not a conscious movement. I think those things can affect things way more than a player does. So yes, I think Vlad is being affected by the things that are nagging at him. And I don't know if it gets better just by him, you know, playing through it, or if an IL stint is probably the better move. But
yeah,
speaking above pay grade, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that the Blue Jays seem like they have a pretty modernized operation. I would hope someone on the training staff in the front office would be making that assessment and, you know, looking at what's changed about his swing or his, you know, the strength in his wrists or his knee and things like that. Hopefully someone's looking at that and has made the determination that, you know, he's not lost strength or it's not hurting his.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the fact that you can't put a player on the injured list against his will.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's go to happier
things. He could hit four home runs in the next week. And, you know, like these things in a 6 month season, these things turn on such a dime, which is, I think, probably a good segue into the next guy.
Homers in bunches. Hi, George Springer. How are you? 3-7 games, including his 54th career leadoff home run versus Justin Verlander, no less. Ex-teammate Justin Verlander. That puts him tied with Alfonso Soriano for second most all time. A little round of applause for George. I mean, it feels like it was sort of inevitable, but it's still awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He's looked really good since he's gotten healthy. Bad virus going around. You know, I'm useless when I get sick. I can't imagine trying to play
seven games in 7 days.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like three flights and sleeping in hotels and moving around. Like, yeah. But yeah, he looks like he's back to the George Springer we all know, which is great. You know, it's less ominous because, you know, when he is struggling, I always find myself counting on my hand. I was like, four more years. Like, ooh. but it's great to see. And it looks like he'll be good for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it comes down to then this is Bo Bichette's team.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been carrying the offense for sure. It's like it seems like he's getting two hits every day.
Leads the team in slugging past Matt Chapman by almost a half a win in Fangraph's wins above replacement. You know, he doesn't walk, but he's only struck out 14% of the time this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been great.
Just for the record, that's down from 19% in 2021 and 22% last year. Like cutting a third of your strikeouts off at any point is a crazy change.
Yeah. This is a little bit of a thinking out loud. Do you think that part of his success has come from the fact that the new like shift rules have made it harder to defend against him? Because I know he's always gone the opposite way, but with fielders having to now like position themselves in more standard positions, a spray hitter might be like he hits a lot of ground balls.
Yeah, but he's not a spray hitter. He's literally an opposite field hitter. That's the crazy part about Bo Bichette. I wonder, I don't know if it's a shift. I wonder if he's actually kind of grown into his strength a bit because his slugging percentage is, you know, as higher than even 2020 when he was, not a rookie, but when he was really, you know, the ball was a lot springier in 2020, if you remember. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think he'll necessarily end the season with an OPS over 900 like he has right now. But I think Bo Bichette has really learned what he does well as a hitter and what he hasn't, right? He's comfortable with that. And I think he's comfortable where he's hitting in the lineup right now. So there was always a balance of aggression for him that he really, as soon as he gets too aggressive, he starts looking like ridiculous, like he did for the first half of last year, first two thirds of last year. He's just jumping out at the first pitch. And he's not really doing that all the time now. And that means he's picking a better pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard for me to comment too much, I feel like, on Bo, because you just see so few hitters like him, right? Like hitters that don't walk very much. And again, until this year, he was pretty league average when it came to strikeouts. So it always felt like the ceiling was kind of limited. You know, I always kind of thought of him as like a Tim Anderson type hitter, but I mean, he's showing, well, he has more power than Tim Anderson for sure. And it just seems like, yeah, he might be one of those rare guys that doesn't need to walk or take a lot of pitches and can still hit, you know, 300.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like a typical swing, so it might not get typical.
Tennis. Results. They say on the broadcast all the time. It's his tennis background.
Of course. Like every guy who ever played football, it's because of his quarterback thinking that's why he can catch well or some weird stuff.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to leave it there for the recap. We're going to come back with your questions and a gold star to hand out right after that. We'll be back in a sec. Yeah, we're back. I had to teach Nick how to take a break again and everything. It was crazy. There was like a whole step-by-step instruction. But we're good. We took a break. We are not broken. We're going to take questions from our listeners.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
First question comes from our Patreon, which y'all are welcome to message us on if you are a patron of the podcast, www.patreon.com/turfpod. You're welcome to join us there. Question, how soon, Michael Warner asks, how soon would you send Manoah down to the minors or on a phantom IL stint, assuming he's still on the big league roster by the time you record? If he's already been sent down, feel free to predict when he'll be back up. So first thing is, it is just sending Manoah down to the minors. He's never been optioned. So they can send him down anytime they feel like. The problem here, Nick, can you identify the problem with sending Manoah down?
Yeah, it's what we were talking about earlier. Who are you going to replace him with? Drew Hutchinson, I think, left the organization earlier this week. He had like an opt-out and he used it. Mitch White's hurt. Ricky Dietemann is hurt.
And most of the other guys in AAA have an ERA in AAA of around 7.
I wanted to say Zach Thompson would be next up, but I don't know if Zach Thompson's an actual pitcher or just like a generic pitcher name that I'm making up. is that the guy they signed from the Pirates to be the depth?
Now I'm going to look at Zach Thompson.
Yeah. I think there's a guy named Zach Thompson they got from the Pirates, but, I think the reason you can't send Manoah down is there's not really anyone to replace him with.
Well, happy to know Zach Thompson isn't a name that you mash together from two names like they do in it is not. He is a real person.
I got it right. Good.
His minor league stats. Let's see if he's got some minor league stats here in 2023. Yes. He is 2-4 with a 6.89 ERA in 47 innings. He's allowed 11 home runs. He's walked 19 and struck out 31. Yeah, Zach Thompson. Okay, that is not really the depth you were looking for. So at this point, unfortunately,
I take Manoah, my chances with Manoah. Yeah,
he might turn it around. Unless he proves to be actually hurt, but you certainly wouldn't need a phantom IL stint for him.
Right.
Next question is not in that window. Next question is in this window. Is this good?
It was basically so Josh showed it. Gausman has now given up 0 runs in 5 of his 12 starts and 0 earned runs in 6 of 12. And Kate asks, is this good?
Pretty fantastic.
I would think so. Yeah, I would think so.
We give it 2 thumbs up here on the podcast. Him and Chris Bassett trying to out shut out one another or something. Wild. Kevin at Kevin Chase 4 says, what can the Jays do to slow down the running game of their opponents? And great win today. It was a great win. All wins that don't involve sloppy play and last minute everything are great wins.
Good wins. So I think one thing I've learned very much this year from the pitch clock is, you know, all through my kind of like life of watching baseball, you'd hear broadcasters say people steal bases off pitchers, not off catchers. And having to watch this year with the pitch clock, I think that's become very evident to me for a lot of reasons. Like you can see the base stealers just timing the pitchers and they're taking off before the pitcher has even started their motion. And so I think the way to improving the running game of opponents is to work with the pitchers, because the catchers are all major league catchers. I think like a good catcher gets the ball to second in like 1.8 seconds, and a bad catcher is like 2.1. So
a 1.8 pop time, as I recall, is phenomenal.
Yeah, and 2.1 is really bad. So there you've got 0.3 of a second in there to work with. So I think it's the pitchers that maybe shoulder more responsibility than it seems in this case.
So I have a question for you. How many of the additional stolen bases we've seen this year have ended up being significant?
Ooh, that's a good question. I can say some of the Jays caught stealings have been, but it's hard to say off the top of my head. I would imagine, like anything, right? It's probably one of those things where it doesn't feel like a big deal, but if you zoomed out and looked at all the extra bases taken, it's got to matter to some degree, right? Because people wouldn't risk it if not.
There's an old article I read from Baseball Prospectus, and it was, what if Ricky Henderson had Pete Incaviglia's legs? The analysis, even back then, because Ricky got caught a lot, turned out to be, he would still be an all-time Hall of Famer if he had never really been a base dealer at all. I just find, because the Jays themselves, now this isn't speaking to their opponents, I know that's what the question is about, but because the Jays are so futile with runners in scoring position, that often taking second base results in a runner occupying first and maybe getting that guy to third, but without the extra base hit with someone on second with less than two outs, often that runner doesn't score anyway. So it's like, well,
yeah.
You stole it. Yay, an extra 90 feet. Yeah. But it did not do much. So, I mean, it's nice on the stat line. I don't know if it's the end of the world. A lot of times I've seen the opponent first and third take second base with the Jays. And because they've been so good at limiting runs with runners on third, you know, limiting hits and that. Okay, you end the inning with guys on second and third instead of first and third. Oh, well. So I don't know if you have to slow down the running game, because everybody's kind of doing the same thing. They're timing pitchers when they know they can't throw over.
Blue Jays are running a lot more too. I think there's one of those things where you watch your own team so much more closely than you watch anything else in the league. It would literally be physically impossible not to. So it probably always feels like, you know,
you're not in the red zone for baseball.
is there like a red zone?
Someone did that a couple of years ago with MLB.TV, but I don't think it ever became an official thing. But it was like when there were runners in scoring position, they would cut to a game, or when the game was tied with runners on or something, they would cut to a game. It was kind of interesting. But baseball is always a game of like unfulfilled potential. I'm sure you would cut lots of times and nothing would happen. They get, you know, a strikeout and it was over.
Yeah. Sometimes I do think about it when the Jays have Kirk or Brandon Belt hitting, just because they're so slow. It's almost like a guaranteed double play if they hit a ground ball that doesn't get a hole. So that's when sometimes I think stolen bases are helpful to keep out of double plays.
Aaron Pileski asks, a clutch hit in this economy? Well, they got one today, and they got one insurance run out of Dalton Varsho, or one insurance hit out of Dalton Varsho last night. Surprise, surprise, that's all they needed. Praise the baseball gods.
Yeah. Hopefully the offense can round into form a little bit, so there is a little bit less pressure on the pitching staff, because, yeah, it would be it would make me feel better as a Blue Jays fan if that happened.
Did you hear that, Blue Jays? Nick isn't feeling great. Come on, get on that.
Oh, no.
Get on that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So that concludes our questions. We will move to the gold star.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
Not fun facts. Dalton Varsho's mother-in-law succumbed to arterial lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease, as it is known. So the cause is near and dear to his heart. What day was Lou Gehrig Day? Yesterday. So June 2nd was Lou Gehrig Day. Dalton Varsho put an exclamation point on it. It's kind of the equivalent of hitting a home run for the kid that's in the hospital, right?
I'd say that's a good analogy.
Late, with the Jays having only a one-run lead, Varsho hit a home run almost to LaGuardia Airport.
Upper deck shot.
Yeah, upper deck in Citi Field is not a thing I've seen a lot of myself. So that was pretty cool. If you are interested in also showing solidarity with his cause, there is a Lou Gehrig Day Louisville Slugger bat autographed by Dalton Varsho and certified and all of the other things that are it's supposed to be, which is currently up for a $1,610 bid on MLBcharities.auctions.mlb.com. So, gold star to Dalton for supporting a good cause and highlighting it on exactly the right night to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those times when baseball felt very poetic.
Yeah, and if you'd like to have a piece of poetry, it would cost you at the moment $1,620, which I don't have for a baseball bat, but maybe a listener does. You never know.
Yeah, I heard on the broadcast that so basically they got a player from every team who was connected to and touched by ALS to donate a bat, and Varsho's was second highest bids behind Mike Trout. Very so nice. That's pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We have casted a pod together, Nick.
We've done it.
We have. We only remains to ask you if you have a final thought.
Oh, yeah. My final thought is going to be also about just the rule changes, because I don't think I've really been on since... Have I been on since the season started? Possibly once. But in any case, yeah, I love the new rules. I don't think there's a bad one in the bunch, and I think it's made baseball a lot more appealing. So I live in Toronto, and so I drag some friends to games who are not necessarily baseball fans, and I think they notice and appreciate the rule changes too. So I would say, so far so good.
Cool. I feel like the one that I just sticks in my craw is the automatic strike three.
like for a pitch violation?
Yeah, for a pitch clock violation.
So Bo got called out on strikes today on the same thing.
That's why it's sticking in my head right now. But
I would say, I guess, yeah, to the one thing would be you could maybe give the umpires a little more room to kind of assess the situation. Because I remember hearing you guys talk about Sergio Romo on a podcast and basically he went out to be honored by the fans one last time in San Francisco, and then the umpire called a pitch clock violation on him because they were cheering and he took his hat off or whatever. So I feel like some more leniency or like discretion on the umpire's part might be helpful. On balance, I would say it's been quite refreshing.
I will sort of piggyback on the rule changes. I am looking forward to them introducing the automatic strike zone that they are trialing, just to see if umpires realize how badly they have missed some. There was a pitch today that just before
against Vlad,
Before Vlad hit the double, and it was a pitch that resulted in John Schneider's ejection. On pitch, I wasn't watching the game on live. I was watching on game day. But it looked like it hit him, almost hit him in the ankles and got called a strike.
Yeah.
And it was like,
it was wild.
If we can do all this other stuff, could we not fix the most delicate area of the game, the strike zone, which has clearly delineated box that gets violated over and over again by human error?
It works in tennis. They have it in tennis and it seems to be fine.
Yeah,
I say great. Having not really watched really any tennis, but full disclosure, oh man, that was a bad call. Yeah, that was Vlad immediately took his time out, I think, because I was watching. I was like, yeah, yeah, not good.
No. All right. So that means that you are Nick Dyka at Nick Dyka, and I am or was Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And this has been Artificial Turf Wars episode number 270. And we will talk at you next week.